Maybe my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel at home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home. Feel at home.
Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning. This week, the show is coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona, where it is literally 110 degrees. Yes, I've made it back stateside out of the rain and into the extreme heat. But anyway, we're going to continue this week with part three of four of shows concerning the 2009 Rainbow Gathering. And that is because right now, as I'm recording this, there are thousands of people gathered in the Allegheny National Forest in Pennsylvania for the 2010 Rainbow Gathering. So here's a little bit more of the flavor of what the Rainbow Gathering is. Thousands of people coming together around July 4th to pray for peace. Let me just start by saying that someone at the gathering told me that the Rainbow Family, as they call it, the Rainbow folks that go to the Rainbow Gathering, the FBI lists them as the largest terrorist organization in the country, because every year on the 4th of July, they gather in a national forest somewhere in our country and pray for peace. But they do it without having permits, and there's no central organization to a Rainbow Gathering. Everything's done by consensus. People just gather, people just show up, and a lot of the same people show up, but there is no organization. And the main idea of a Rainbow Gathering is that thousands of people just gather in the woods on July 4th and the week preceding and some days after, and on July 4th they pray for peace. And the pivotal day, of course, is actually July 4th, and from dawn until noon on July 4th, everyone at the gathering maintains a vow of silence, at least everyone that's in around the main part of the gathering, you know. But that's a time that people can pray in their own ways for peace and meditate for peace. And then around noon is when the place just erupts and everyone cheers and just drums and cheers and sings and dances for hours and hours on end. And some ground rules, there's pretty much very little, if none, no money exchanged. Most everything's done by giving stuff or trading stuff or bartering for things. And also alcohol isn't really allowed, surprisingly. But the reason it's not is because it causes so much trouble. And really the point of the gathering is to gather for peace. And so they have a place that they call A Camp. And A Camp usually is somewhere kind of out where people are parking cars and stuff, where yes, you are allowed to drink out there if you want to drink out there and party it up out there. So in a nutshell, that's the Rainbow Gathering. Thousands of people gathering in one of our national forests to spend a week meditating and praying for peace. And of course, all the calamity and magic that goes along with that sort of event. And in the background, you're hearing some sitar music I recorded one evening around a campfire at the gathering. Last week we heard my story of July 4th, the pivotal day in the Rainbow Gathering, the silence and the calamity. This week we're going to hear from other people, hear their stories, people I interviewed, people I had conversations with during the gathering. And next week on the fourth show about the Rainbow Gathering, we'll be doing what I'm going to call the meditation show. And in this show I'm just going to play some of the music and some of the natural sound recordings I made during the gathering, and gonna just do it uninterrupted, so it'd be a great show to record and maybe play back when you're meditating or going to sleep or just hanging out somewhere. But this week we're gonna hear different perspectives about the gathering and other people's stories. We're gonna start with a conversation I had with a young man on our way from the road, the dirt road, and through the forest there, down to the main meadow, the main part of the gathering. He tells a story about being one of the muddy people. If you remember from last week's show, I was talking about during the calamity after the long communal silence, at the gathering. Part of what was going on was that there was a whole 30 or 40 people just wrestling and swarming in the mud in the meadow, and they were just completely coated head to toe with mud. So this guy was one of those people, so we'll get to hear a little bit about what that was like. And also, he's a guy whose mom was raised on the hog farm. He does a good job of explaining exactly what that is, but it was a pivotal piece of 1960s counterculture.
So you're actually in the mud?
Yeah, I was.
Were you like one of those like naked people like swirling in the mud?
No, I had pants on, but I was like hugging everybody and jumping up and down and singing.
Whoa, what is that like? Is it like an orgy or what?
I don't know. It was warm in there, so I guess it like helped us from being all cold. But the mud felt all good, though.
Was it like a complete release? Like there was just nothing in your mind at all? You just like rolling around or what?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't know. It just felt so good in that mud. And when I came out, I was like steaming.
Because one of the things I was thinking yesterday was I was like completely tripping out, and I was thinking like you couldn't tell where the earth ended and where the people began.
Oh yeah. Well, like I was trying to rinse it off. That was the hardest part, getting it off me. I had to get it out. I still have it in my hair.
Any regrets?
Yeah. Just because, like, pouring the water on my head, it was, like, coming off black.
Wow.
But I only have it, like, under my fingernails and on the rims of my face and in my ears now.
Cool.
And it was hard washing it off with muddy water.
Oh, yeah. It's more like just kind of, like, paint thinner at that point. It's just going to get less muddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why did you come here?
Well, my mom and sister came here a couple of years ago, and my mom's a big hippie. Like, she grew up right next to the hog farm, and so we came out here. We've always wanted to come, but we finally were able to make it this year, because it was just, my sister lives, like, a couple miles from here, so we finally were able to make it out.
And what's the hog farm?
The hog farm, it was, like, this hippie house in the 60s where, like, they ran their pig for president, and like they had this like family there that had a trailer with like a couple kids, and one of their beds was like painting on the wall would fold down and it'd be a double bed.
That's so cool. And that was how you were raised, like in that environment?
Well, no, my mom grew up like that though.
Oh, right.
But like I grew up in Norman, Oklahoma. There's a lot of hippies there though. And,
hey.
It's like OU campus.
And tell me one besides or could it be the mud, tell me one highlight from the event for you.
That like, I don't know, I kinda learned that a little dirt don't hurt.
How what?
That a little dirt doesn't hurt.
Little dirt doesn't hurt. Cool, man. Oh, right by the info tent. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
And now we go to a conversation with River. He's in his early 20s, and he had shoulder-length blonde dreadlocks. And we had this conversation in the bus, and after a few minutes of the conversation, you might notice in the background that we start to hear a little bit of the rain, I think, hitting the tin roof of the bus, and also kind of the thunder in the distance from the thunderstorms that would roll through almost every afternoon in that part of New Mexico.
This is something I wanted to do. I went to like one regional gathering like in Ocala, Florida, and it like opened my eyes to this whole place. And I've been like experimenting with like hallucinogens for a couple of years now, and like I got dosed out here in the teepee village, and it opened up my eyes and my mind to like all of eternity and how everyone's like one, you know, with the universe. Like that concept of one consciousness, you know, that we're all a part of. And after I got that, I really understood what the Warriors of the Light are about, you know? And now it's my destiny and journey to take this out on the road with me and it's to like help like uplift the spiritual revolution that's occurring. Because once some flowers start to open, then like all the other flowers follow, and all they need is light, you know.
Oh, right on. Yeah. And was this on Saturday?
It's probably like 6 days ago.
Oh, right.
So,
on.
I've lost all track of time being out here. You know, you go by natural time.
Yeah. Fully, yeah. It's like, oh, it's today. And later, it's sunset time.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Tonight's the full moon, so I wanted to stick around for that. Everyone's leaving, but I think it'll be really cool energy here.
Is that tonight?
Yeah.
Oh, right on. Cool. And tell me, like, when you were dosing, like, what are some of the specific memories you have, like, things you saw?
All right, I got dosed, and I walked back to my camp over by Fat Kids, and then, as I was, like, kind of putting my, like, cold, warmer clothes on, like, I realized it was, like, more difficult than it ever had been in my life for some weird reason. And then, like, I started walking back because my friends wanted to get dosed, too, so I was taking them back to the teepee. And as I was walking, it started to kick in for me. And, my friend Jake, he was being, like, kind of, like, he seemed really weird to me, and he was being, like, a weird energy around me. And, he was just kind of, like, whenever I trip, I feel, like, good and evil, like, kind of, like, in my friends, like, kind of, like, talking to me and like trying to convince me of things. And they wanted me to go with them to the teepee village, so I followed them. And the whole time, like, I started to like feel weird, and like at one point my whole body, like, I could like see that I was moving and walking, but I had absolutely no control over what I was doing. Like, and I was asking, I was like, what am I, like, what am I right now? And like they were like, well, you're a ball of light. And I was like, I'm a ball of light. And, like, as I was looking at the moon, you know, and the sky and the stars were kind of, like, moving in the sky, and, like, the moon was, like, so bright and, like, brilliant. I'd never seen anything like it before in my life. And I ran into a few friends who pulled me out of my dark place, because, like, I felt like they were all trying to lead me down this muddy path to hell. Like, they were all taking me with them, and, like, I felt like I was going to be sacrificed or something. So, like, at one point I just decided to turn, and I felt like I was making the right decision, and I left them and went back down towards Dirty Kids Meadow. And, all along the way, I could feel, like, people's energy and see, like, everything, like, working, like, in the patterns of nature. And, like, through all the people I talked to, like, they helped me to awaken my mind completely. And it was just what I needed, like, to get where I am now, you know?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I had a similar experience, for sure. Because, yeah, for me, it was, like, on Saturday, and I was just, like, hanging out under a tree and, you know, watching people go by when everyone was quiet. And then, like, it started to kick in, like, right as everyone started to make noise. And I was just, like, I could just see, you know, like, when people go by, I could just, like, completely see who they were, you know? Like
yeah. Now, like, when I look into people's eyes, I see myself, like, in the same way. This one guy was telling me about, like, the concept of I and I. Like, I believe it's, like, religious, maybe Rastafari, but, like, it's, like, you... Like, I and I says, like, I respect the spirit that dwells in you that also dwells in me. But we have separate perspectives of it because we're viewing the world through different bodies. So that's I and I, you know? Oh, and that's kind of the same concept of, like, the collective consciousness, you know?
Yeah. And where were you during, when, you know, during the silent, and then during, like, on Saturday?
I've been all over the place. Like, like I said, I was camped back at Fat Kids, which is, like, on the complete opposite side of the gathering.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I've also visited the Warriors of the Light camp, and those people are cool. And I've been all over, like, Main Meadow and Dirty Kids Meadow. And then I inherited this house, like, this wigwam structure that some kid built. Like, he left and left it to me. So now me and my girlfriend, Rain, are, like, staying in there.
Yeah. Back, like, in regular society, like, what are some of, like, the, you know, one or two or three, like, things you really want to get across to people that don't know about what you saw?
It's something that they're going to have to experience. And someone told me this, like, one of the wise people I talked to said, can't change the world, you can change yourself, though, and through that you can change the world. Like, you can't try to just go and change it, though. You have to change yourself. And, like, people will see that, and then once they see it in themselves, you know? And then that's the only way that you can teach somebody.
Right on. You know, before I got here, this is my first one too, before I got here, I kind of had this thing where I'm like, you know, I was trying to explain to some people that didn't know about, you know, where I was going. I said, well, yeah, it's just a whole bunch of hippies go out in the woods on the 4th of July and they pray for peace. And then I thought about it, and I was like, it seems like kind of a backwards way to get peace. It's not too hands-on, but...
You want to hear, like, my take on, like, the Warriors of the Light?
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to record it or not, but if you don't have enough tape.
No, well, I can always, like, delete it off here. If, you know.
Yeah.
And I can, I just got to dump stuff onto my computer is what happens.
Like, is it still going? Or?
Yeah, it's going right now.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, the Warriors of the Light, from what I've learned and what I've, like, been told, like, is an ancient Hopi Indian prophecy that the Warriors of the Light will, like, come from all the world and gather, and that they will, like, awaken, like, and the ones that aren't awake will become awakened. And once you're awake, like, it's up to you to, like, awaken the rest of the people before, like, 2012, when the great, like, consciousness shift happens. Like, so everybody is going to get there, but, like, it's up to us to, like, help people understand what's happening. Once you, like, the early blossoming people, you know? They're the ones who are helped, supposed to, like, help guide into this transition.
So you're one of the first flowers.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, I'm probably, like, the middle, flowers. You know? Like, when I was born, there's probably people who are already awake, you know? Those are, like, the first flowers.
Right on.
And then it goes way back in time, too, for, like, all the prophets and stuff like that. People, like, even the Hopi Indian tribes, you know? Like, themselves. And the Mayans, they kind of understood everything, too. But, like, we're living in the age of forgetting ancient wisdom. Like, it's coming right up to, like, the end, you know, of this era. And it's not the end of human culture by any means. This is just the next step in, like, our progression as a race, you know?
And what do you think is going to happen in 2012?
Well, I've heard a lot of things, and one of them was, like, there's supposed to be, like, a shift, like a polar shift, because we line up with all the other planets, and we reach our galactic center. And this has happened before, and it's going to happen again. Like, and when that happens, the polarities of the Earth, like, because you know how we spin on an axis?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it completes this axis, and it's, like, starts, like, and it's, like, everything shifts. Like, the gravity of the world will change, and, like, you know, the whole world will kind of go crazy for a little while, like, you know, for a couple days while we're in that phase. And it's going to kill a lot of people, and it's going to, like, destroy a lot of the human population and, like, all the things we've created. But the ones who kind of understand and try to, like, you can't really prepare yourself, but, like, you can just know what's happening, and through that knowledge, like, you might be able to survive.
Yeah, right on. So do you have any vision, like, what the world's going to be like when, you know,
I would hope that it would be, like, an understanding, like, where people all understand that we're part of that collective consciousness, and, like, we can stop, like, being greedy, and we can, like, start seeing that, like, through helping each other, we help the whole world, you know, and, like, we're the children of the world. The world, like, we belong to the world doesn't belong to us, you know? And, like, we're gonna see that, and, like, hopefully we can make a beautiful world where it's, like, less about, like, greed and, like, the ego, like, believing in I, like, just me and everything that I want, you know? And it would become, like, everyone understands everyone, and, like, we're all trying to help each other, because through that you're helping yourself, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. We're all in this together, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, none of us, as much as we like to think so, none of us can get along by ourselves.
Yeah, but that's kind of like what I learned about the Warriors of the Light while I was here, and I feel like I am one. I'm going to take it with me back out there and, like, try to, like, change things a little bit, you know?
Cool. Right on, right on. Wow, and the sun came back out.
Yeah, man. Stopped raining.
This next conversation was with a skinny middle-aged man who had a story to tell. That's what he told me. And make sure you get a load of his name.
My name is Shalom Dream Peace Compost. And part of the story is involved me putting that name on a wedding license for some people that got married at the teepees on the 4th of July. So the story starts, I was up in Handy Camp, and I take photos at rainbow gatherings, and there was a mother and a really beautiful baby that I was taking pictures of. And this brother comes by and says, "Do you know where Zen Coyote is?" And I said, "No, I don't know where he is, but if I see him, what should I tell him?" I said, "Well, we need him to perform our marriage. We want to get married in an hour down at the teepees." I said, "I don't know if I can find Zen Coyote, but if you can't find him, do you want me to marry you?" And they said, "Sure." So I only had an hour to get back to my camp and get ready and have warm clothes, but I went down to the teepees, and there was the bride and the groom and the parents of the groom, and I was the minister. I'm a minister in the Universal Life Church, and this is about the seventh wedding I performed, but it was the first wedding that I ever performed that Like, within 3 minutes after the couple exchanging wedding rings, a rainbow appeared in the sky. And soon we saw it was a double rainbow, and we saw a band of purple between the two rainbows, and it was a very bright rainbow, and there was a point where we could see, in between the two, we could see just a tiny touch of rainbow to make it a triple rainbow. And I have never seen them. Some other people saw some rainbow on the outside, that we all got a glimpse of the triple rainbow, but the double rainbow was real clear, it was really bright, and it was really beautiful. And the miracle that it happened, within 2 minutes of Adam and Danielle exchanging rings at the teepees, was a very special rainbow experience, and nothing like it that I've ever experienced.
Wow, yeah, I did see that rainbow. That was probably the most brilliant rainbow I've ever seen. Yeah, that was, and yeah, how fitting, how cliche, you know, of course. And the other question I'm trying to ask everybody is, if somebody's never heard of a rainbow gathering before, like somebody listening, like, how would you explain it?
I describe it as an exercise in cooperative living. I like the subtitle, Gathering the Tribes, because there is such a diverse, every kitchen is different. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between kitchens. But, yeah, you got the road dogs, and you got the multimillionaires, you got people who arrive with, you know, one guy was going to hitchhike, he didn't even have a shirt on his back. All he was wearing was pants. I don't know whether he made it here. I saw him in California. People take care of each other. I got my sprained wrist wrapped up at Calm. We provide every kind of service to the family, you know, whether it's, you know, sister throws up from eating pot brownies and I take a shovel and I cover up her vomit. It's like every kind of service. You never know what kind of service you're going to be called upon, but people serve each other. Probably 75% of the people at Rainbow are here in love and service, and probably about some portion of the people at Rainbow are just here to have a good time and party and do drugs and have a real good time. And the interaction between that is just a miracle. That is just, it's absolutely beautiful.
Inside the drug-free teepee one night, there's a group of about 10 guys and one dark-skinned woman. All appeared to be in their early 20s, and all were dirty from days or weeks out in the forest, but grounded from the rainbow experience being out there. One of the guys started a series of redneck Jedi jokes, so we'll listen to some of that.
The redneck jokes? And we were wondering, well, what if you're a Jedi? How do you know if you're a Jedi redneck? So we just sat down and started coming up with ways. For example, if Darth Vader has ever said to you, Luke, I'm your father and your uncle, probably your cousin, you might be a Jedi redneck. If you think that Princess Leia should have given Luke Skywalker a second chance at the end of the third film, you might be a Jedi redneck. If your lightsaber is Hunter Orange, camouflage handle, you might be a Jedi redneck. If you use your X-Wing to go deer hunting, you might be a Jedi redneck. If you use your lightsaber to shotgun beer, might be a Jedi redneck. If your porch collapses and 10 or more Ewoks die, you might be a Jedi redneck.
I have womp rats bigger than that back home as a pickup line at a bar.
If you have ever used the Force to get another beer, you might be a Jedi redneck. And if you have ever said, may the Force be with y'all, might be a Jedi redneck.
This guy goes to heaven, right? Goes to the pearly gates, and St. Peter says, well, you were only unfaithful to your wife 5 times in all your years of marriage, so you get to drive a Volkswagen through heaven. He's like, all right, that's all right.
I love this fucking joke.
Yeah. Next guy comes up, and he's like, You've only been unfaithful three times, so you get to drive a Mercedes. He's like, cool. You know, third guy comes up and says, you've never been unfaithful in all your years of marriage. You get to drive a Ferrari for your days through heaven. He's like, right on. He's tearing through the streets. And pretty soon, he pulls over, and the guy drives by in the Volkswagen. The guy in the Ferrari is just bawling. He's like, why are you crying? You got the nicest wheels in heaven. And he says, I know, but my wife just went by on roller skates.
Hey, what do you call a black pilot?
Pilot, yeah, you racist.
Oh, are you racist?
Oh,
I'm racist. The black guy flying the plane is pilot. You know,
chocolate chips.
I do have to tell y'all, I do not get offended by the word nigger. I am half black and half Puerto Rican. I'm not offended by the word spick or any Hispanic jokes. I laugh at everything.
Can we just say nigger for like 10 seconds all together?
Yeah.
We have National Nigger Day. Everybody's a nigger. You're a nigger, you're a nigger, nigger. We'll get over the word.
I don't have a joke, but I have a funny story. I love shocking people. You know, it's just great. Like, and the nigger is a great way to shock people.
I know. So, the N-word is just as liberal as anything. It's a free spirit of words.
How many dead babies can screw the life of a tone of voice if it's said with a hanger?
Yeah. But there's nigger and nigga. You know, it depends which way you say it and how you use it. I don't find nobody here racist at the gathering, period. Yeah. So that's why nothing offends me.
He said the most racist game he ever saw kids play was cowboys and Indians. He said, how come you don't see them out there playing rednecks and niggers?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm
not the comics.
So I'm in the middle of a cafe, right?
Attack my race, not my comics.
And my friend, I'm in the middle of a cafe. My friend is supposed to be meeting me there to cash my paycheck, last paycheck. Really need it. I have a lot of things to do that day. And he finally gets there, and he's like, dude, we can't cash your check today. He's like, why not? It's Monday. And he's like, it's Martin Luther King Day. And so just for fun, you know, out loud, so everybody come around me, because I say, nigger. Everybody just gives me the shock look of horror, like, oh my God.
My daughter, when she was like 5 years old, we're in the Rogueburg. Roseburg Valley Mall, little redneck mall. And you know how kids are thinking they're talking really low and they're not? This chick walks by, and she must have been 450 pounds and loud as hell. I mean, the whole mall heard my daughter. She said, Dad, she looks like she was baptized at SeaWorld. And the whole mall just lost it, man. And this chick turns around, she's screaming at me like I did it, you know? And I get my daughter outside, and I'm trying to yell at her, but I'm laughing so fucking hard, you know. I'm like, Savannah, where do you get this? She's all, Dad, it just floats through the air. All you got to do is reach out and grab it. I'm like, there's something wrong with you, little girl.
No, there's something right with it.
She can see it.
Is there any pot left going around?
Yeah, I got ashed on.
And that's when we'll wind things up with the show, getting ashed on. My name's Dave Manning. You've been listening to the My Home is on the Road show, the half-hour weekly show about stories and music from the American road. For more about the show, to subscribe to the podcast, or to hear more of my music, go to davemanning.net. And remember, next week is going to be the fourth show about the Rainbow Gathering. It's going to be what I call the meditation show, where I'm just going to play music and some natural sound recordings I made at the gathering without interruption. So that way it'd be a good show to kind of record and chill out to. And a big thank you to KWMD Guy, who, when we were having some beers the other night, revealed some things about his hippie past that I never knew.
My name is Shalom Dream Peace Compost. I'm a minister in the Universal Life Church.
So thanks so much for listening, and safe travels, and have yourself a fantastic day.
Well, my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel home. And I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel home. Feel at home.